Let your voice be heard. It's Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station.
You don't have to have education in order to know that you want certain fundamental rights, you have got aspirations, you have got claims. It has nothing to do with education whatsoever.
The youth of today are the leaders of tomorrow. That the reason for our children leaving school at the very elementary standards is because of poverty and frustration.
Some issues that are non-negotiable, among others, our demand for one person, one vote, a united South Africa, the liberation of women, and the protection of fundamental human rights.
The dreams of a South Africa, which represents all South Africans. It is the beginning of a new era.
Radio 1 honors the life and legacy of South African anti-apartheid revolutionary, politician, leader, and hero, Nelson Mandela. And a very good morning to you. Welcome to today's edition of Praise in the City. We thank you so much for joining us today. As you heard with our opening segment there, today we are going to honor the life and legacy of a great man. He passed away just a few days ago at the age of 95. He lived a very, very full life and did so much for the fight for freedom for South Africa, and in so many ways, we can identify with the struggles of our brothers and sisters in South Africa before 1990, I guess you can say. So we want to give you an opportunity to call, share your reflections. What do you know about Nelson Mandela? What were your thoughts about him? How did you, especially in the 80s and 90s or 70s, 80s and 90s, or however old you are, I should say, before apartheid was no longer the rule of the land in South Africa, how did you feel about apartheid? Was there anything that you did here in the United States that supported divesting from South Africa because of the situation? So let's kind of reflect on that time. You know, where were you when Nelson Mandela was freed from prison? Did you watch it on TV? What were your thoughts? So we're going to spend the time talking about that and then sharing some comments from my guest, myself, and of course you, about, do you think we should be more involved? Do you think we should be more knowledgeable about world events, about things that are going on in Africa and various countries, because there are quite a few struggles over there. There's quite a bit of unrest, and a whole lot of human rights are being violated in various places. So that's what we're talking about this morning. We're having a worldview of Praise in the City today, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. So call and share your thoughts about Nelson Mandela, and also talk about how you were feeling. What was your take on, or your stance on, apartheid back in the 80s, the 70s and 80s? So give us a call, 215-263-1039, 215-263-1039. Joining me in studio is my offsite producer and friend to the show, Mr. Donovan West. Donovan, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How you doing, Tiff?
I'm good. So I want to start off with your thoughts on Nelson Mandela, and then the second part of the question is, you know, where were you back in the 80s and 90s, and how did you feel about the unrest down there?
Wow. First thing, you know, Nelson Mandela, he is an icon, and sometimes I think that we throw around that term very loosely or liberally.
Yes.
And Nelson Mandela is someone that it was, you know, a hero that walked among us.
Mm-hmm.
And in many ways, we look at historical figures. You know, we look at, you know, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, you know, Mahatma Gandhi. And what I think many of us, you know, did realize, and I think that was good about, you know, him being around and being able to see that is that, you know, he is right there amongst them, and in many ways leads the, you know, through his deeds. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean just the things that he was able to do and talk about, but also in terms of, you know, his resilience, his ability to fight the silent war, you know, in his sense of patience. He was able to actually demonstrate his vision. And I think people were able to actually catch fire to that, and it was able to be, you know, to run virally in many ways that was outside of his own doing.
Yeah.
But because of just his spirit, and because, you know, again, I think we started to enter an age where information could be spread more, you know, freely.
Right.
I think that now became the difference between perhaps, you know, the cause of apartheid and other causes, you know, of civil rights in the past.
Very good. Now, the second part of my question is, let's start with, where were you when Mandela was freed on February 11th, 1990?
I was in high school. I was in, I was in 10th grade, you know, just to date myself. But
quite all right.
But, you know, in many ways, that was my introduction to, I guess, our generation's sense of civil rights. And also, you know, in many ways, you know, as a Jamaican, you often are trying to, you know, pitch to people about the fact that we're all, you know, we're all black, period. It's not, you don't have to say, oh, well, you're African or you're from the Caribbean or this and the other. So apartheid and the issue of apartheid, you know, is the fact that these are our brothers and sisters, and this is our fight,
right?
Not just their fight,
right?
And so, you know, apartheid to me was a very big, you know, I guess you could say introduction to the world about, you know, being conscious of world events, world issues that really affect all of us. Because again, if you're here in the States and you have companies, organizations, institutions that support them, then what does that say about their view of us?
Right. Right. And there was a lot of talk, you know, it's funny because I watch a lot of the History Channel, and there's so much that I forgot, you know, from the 80s and 90s. And I just remember in world history class, you know, because in my school we had, you know, not just history, but we studied current history. We all had to have a subscription to Newsweek. So we were pretty much on top of, like, what was going on in South Africa in the 80s as a high school student. So I forgot how Ronald Reagan really kind of supported what was going on over there. And I had to watch a documentary about various presidents, and that was mentioned. And it's interesting because it came on TV a few months ago. And, you know, when Nelson Mandela passed the other day, I was just thinking, you know, that's so interesting. I totally forgot about that part of Reagan's presidency, you know, because they talk about how he was such a great communicator and all these other things, you know, depending on where you were on the economic scale, you had a different opinion. But that was a part of his presidency that I completely forgot about. And I do remember I was in college, actually, the day he was released. I was in Queens, New York at a friend's house, but I was in college. I was at Temple and I was a freshman, and we were a very active African-American or Black Student Union. We're African American Student Union, a Black Student Union. And we were very much about divesting from South Africa.
We were
so anti-apartheid. We were showing our, you know, college sisterly, brotherly support of those in South Africa, you know, and we spoke out vehemently often about it. And it's interesting because there was an episode of A Different World that came on the other day that I forgot about.
I remember that.
You know, that talked about it, and they had South African students, and they were all talking about apartheid, and Whitley Gilbert was doing her whatever, talking about her stuff, herself and her stuff. But watching the episode, I think to myself, that kind of surmises what it was like to be a Black student in college at that time when he was freed, when apartheid was going on, and there was like a united front with a lot of Black students.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the whole concept of, again, boycotting is about, you know, divesting from these, you know, a company, an organization, an institution that supports racism, and You know, when you're talking about, you know, the economic footprint that America has, you know, on the world, mm-hmm. absolutely. You have to be able to say, you know what, we're going to take what I would call a moral stand on some things. But again, America doing that at, you know, mm-hmm. at certain times in the history, depending on who you are. And right. again, your class, your race, you know, you already know that, you know, our track record, right, isn't mm-hmm. the best. So, you know, being able to say, you know, listen, it's clear what's happening in this part of the world. And it's also mm-hmm. clear that, you know, America can definitely, you know, provide a level of support by way of taking a stand. And we're better to hit somebody mm-hmm. than their pockets.
Absolutely. All right. So we want to bring you into the conversation today. We are talking about the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela. So I have two questions for you. One, call in with your thoughts and reflections of him as a man, of his passing. And part two, where were you when Mandela was freed? Did you watch it? How did you feel about it? Were you actively involved in the anti-apartheid movement here in the United States? So give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 215-263-1039. Go into the phones. We have Cassandra calling in from Willow Grove. Cassandra, good morning. You're live on the air. Hey, Cassandra. Can you hear us? Oh, no, I can't hear you. Okay, so, Cassandra, I know you're there. I see that you're there, so we're going to try and get you back on the line real quick. So when you finally got to college, you know, what was the temperature like for you? Was there still a movement, an anti-apartheid movement? Were you still connected to those worldviews about what was happening in Africa?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, shout out to Penn State. You know, mm-hmm. I went to Penn State, and you know, one of the things that was interesting for me, at least, I said to myself, you know, I don't want to go to Penn State and come out bleached. So every semester, literally, that I was at Penn State, I took a minority studies course. To some point, it became my other major.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I stayed totally connected. And one of the things that I also try to do as, you know, becoming eventually the president of the, you know, the Black Student, you know, organization, mm-hmm. Is try to, you know, again, make sure that information was shared very freely mm-hmm. Amongst, you know, not just, you know, those in the group, but also among between groups. And that mm-hmm. they got a good sense of that. Racial tension was up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I can't ignore that, especially during the OJ period. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's something that I think at the end of the day, people did not understand that apartheid and, you know, those things don't go away right away. Mm-hmm. Just the same way as, you know, freeing the slaves didn't mean everything would be okay.
Right.
It's still now a process. And again, remember, institutionalized racism is just that. You know, these are systems, processes that start from a mindset.
Yeah.
And it takes years, it takes generations to change that mindset. So, you know, whereas people have to be extremely vigilant about, you know, the adjustment, the changes that need to be made, and more importantly, be sensitive to all the areas that it actually impacts.
Absolutely. All right, let's try to get Cassandra back on the line again. Cassandra, good morning. You're live on the air. Hello, Cassandra. I don't know. We're having some technical difficulties. That is not okay. So we're going to try and figure out what is causing the technical difficulty. But we see you there, Cassandra. So we want to still invite you, if you have not called in, we do want you to call in. We're going to get Cassandra on the line in just a matter of minutes. It's interesting, just going through a couple of key points in Nelson Mandela's life. He was charged with sabotage and sentenced to life in prison in 1964. He was freed from prison in 1990 on February 11th is when he walked out of the doors, and it was on TV, and, you know, it was definitely an amazing event to watch, because I did watch that. He wins the Nobel Peace Prize by 1993, and in 1994 he is elected the first Black president of South Africa. So that was amazing. He stayed there in power until 1999, when he steps down. He did have prostate cancer, and then he retired from public life in 2004. So it's so interesting, you know, and you look at, you know, he was born in 1918, and people from that time, it was just such a, you know, we can't really think about it, because we were so born so late in the 20th century. But you know, you got to think about what was life like in 1918, like not only in the United States, but what was life like down there, and all the things that were set up, those racial tensions, that we can't do things because of the color of our skin.
Right, right. I mean, often we we're reflecting on, you know, just how powerful it is to live in a day where we can see a black president, and just imagine if you yourself, you know, you grew up in an age where, you know, racism was running rampant, mm-hmm. and then became a huge victim of it. I mean, you're talking about being locked up, you know, for a couple of decades, mm-hmm. and then to come out and then become the first president elected from the democratic process that was just recently, you know, installed at that time. That's incredible. And then also, again, as you just now mentioned, within a couple of years of your release, not only are you becoming president, but, you know, you win a Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. You know, the world is rejoicing over your release. And again, you know, the impact that he's had on the world, you know, the rippling effect has been tremendous.
Yeah. Ever since he passed away, there have been so many quotes on Facebook. He has, and I didn't realize exactly how many amazing quotes mm-hmm. he's said, and I definitely have a couple up on my profile. But one quote that I have said many times, and I've seen repeated many times in publications or mm-hmm. on Facebook mm-hmm. and whatnot, is this quote here: our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. Sure. I love that quote. That's amazing, because if you think about it, you know, why aren't so many people living out their fullest potential? Sure. You're like, you're afraid to be that powerful because you know what's going to happen. There's going to be hate. You might get killed. You might, you know, you might be isolated. You might be alone. You might lose all your friends. And look at what, you know, what happened to him. He had to go to jail.
Yeah.
But he was willing to die for what he believed in, like wholeheartedly willing to die.
I agree. And I think, again, you know, those amazing quotes, you know, they stem from being, you know, incarcerated for such a long period of time mm-hmm. and having to reflect and having to keep your spirit in such a way that, you know, that you're not torn down by, right. you know, the pressure that you're feeling from, you know, from the oppressor.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, he could have easily come out and just start spewing just negativity, mm-hmm. you know, and rightfully so in many ways to all of us. I mean, again, part of the reason why he is a saint is the fact that, you know, he came out and, again, just remained poised and present and understanding just where he is at that moment, and mm-hmm. also understanding that all eyes are on him. And so with having the microphone to the world, you know, mm-hmm. what is he going to say?
Yeah.
And what's his message going to be? And again, his quotes, you know, they will live on forever. His life, his legacy, again, it rivals, you know, those that have shaped our history, mm-hmm. and I believe that his actions will continue to shape the future.
Absolutely. All right, we're gonna. Cassandra has been so patient. We've been trying to work out the technical bug that's been keeping her from talking to us. So I think we got it straightened out. Cassandra, hi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Thank you so much for your patience. You're live on the air.
Okay, you can finally hear me.
Yes, I can hear you now.
That's great.
Awesome sauce. Okay, what's your comment?
My comment was, actually, I was on my way out of the United States, and I was mailing a letter to President Reagan to thank him for for signing the Voting Rights Act. So mm-hmm. I was on my way to the Congo, and I mailed my letter in Paris. Mm-hmm. But once I got to the Congo, I heard so much about what was going on in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to my outstation without running water, I had a cook and I ate great food for about a month, but mm-hmm. then I couldn't eat great food anymore that had cans from South Africa. Mm-hmm. And I realized I could eat local bugs and caterpillars and, you know, beans and rice that the mm-hmm. locals ate. And that's what I did for the rest of that year that I was there.
Wow.
To divest.
Wow.
That's incredible.
And what was it that brought you or that took you to the Congo in the first place?
I was teaching at a school, boarding school, out, wow. way out from any city.
Mm-hmm.
And after I heard the pleas from the people about their country and what was going on in South Africa, I just couldn't I just couldn't order food from there anymore.
Amazing what you did to support. So where were you on February 11th, 1990? Were you watching television when Nelson Mandela was freed?
Yes, I was. Mm. And I was pregnant with my first child at that time.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah. Were you still in the Congo or were you here in the United States?
I was here in the United States.
You were back here. Okay. Fantastic. Good reflections, good comments. Interesting, interesting stuff. Thank you so much for sharing.
We commend you.
You're quite welcome. I just kind of got filled up here this morning and I thought, I never call, but I have to call. I knew exactly where I was during that time before he got released, but just doing the apartheid and having to divest.
Yeah, amazing.
It was, and people were, when I came home, they couldn't believe that I had eaten bugs. But once they told me they were 100% protein, I was fine.
You go, girl. You are the bomb.com. I don't know. That I would definitely have to be deep into my belief on that subject.
Way before Survivor,
and
right?
The grasshopper were so delicious that I got a leg stuck in my throat.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Okay, Lord,
never have I can put that on one of the comments I've never had said to me ever in my life until just now.
Okay, caterpillar legs are quite tasty.
Yes, and I had
with
one
butter?
Stuck in my throat.
With butter? No butter? Okay.
But that was my contribution to divesting, and I think I made it. I was a little bit thinner, but I think I made it out fine the rest of that year.
But that's amazing, and thank you for feeling so strongly about the subject and doing your part. That's great.
Okay, you're quite welcome.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye. And we'd love to hear from you. We have the phone situation fixed, so we can hear you if you give us a call, 215-263-1039. We'd like your reflections on Nelson Mandela. Also, where were you February 11th, 1990, when he was freed from prison? Did you watch TV? Did you have children? Did you make them watch TV? Was this an important event in your life? If it wasn't, do you think it should have been? Give us a call, 215-263-1039. So with that thought, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more conversation after this.
You're listening to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's Inspiration Station. In the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's Inspiration Station.
We have made it very clear in our policy that South Africa is a country of many races. There is room for all the various races in this country.
Thank you very much to you all. Thank you that you chose to care. I want to tell you, as I have told many other meetings before, we respect you, we admire you, and above all, we love you.
At his trial in 1964, Nelson Mandela closed his statement from the dock saying, "I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I've cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It's an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die."
And a very good morning to you. This is Praise in the City on Praise 103.9 FM. We are honoring the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela. We've been asking you your thoughts on the man's life and accomplishments, and also to talk about where were you on February 11th, 1990? Did you watch his release from prison on television? Was the struggles in South Africa, were they important to you? Did you participate in any anti-apartheid activities, any protests? Did you stop buying certain products, or did it just simply pass you by? Give us a call, 215-263-1039, 215-263-1039. 563-1039. Joining me in studio is Donovan West. He is our offsite producer and friend to the show. And again, welcoming you back to the program this morning. So off mic, we were talking about the importance of knowing about world events, especially what's going on in Africa. And it's so funny because, you know, oftentimes when I hear people reference Africa, they reference Africa like it's a country, like it has one language, one people, it's one place. And you just reference, so you might say Spain, France, Africa. Completely different situation altogether. And there are a lot of struggles that continue to go on in various countries in Africa, no matter what you're, you know, north, south, west, east, central. There's a lot going on. So I want to know from you, do you think it's important that we stay connected to the struggles over there? And if so, why? If not, why not?
I think it's extremely important that we stay connected to, you know, just world events, period, and not just Africa or the 1,001, countries throughout the world. But you know, just to have a great sense of what's going on, because at the end of the day, you know, when you are a world that is extremely diverse, you need to know. You need to know what's going on with your neighbor. Often, you know, from a business perspective, you know, a lot of times it's really important that you try to get to know what's going on with your staff, you know, with your coworker, with your, you know, your peers in the classroom. I mean, why wouldn't you want to know what's going on in the world when your country represents the world?
Right.
You know, so yes, having a knowledge of what's going on in the world is extremely important, because at some point it does impact you, whether it is your country being insensitive to their country's, you know, challenges, or if it's financial in terms of, you know, again, how does that impact the economy? How does that impact your investments, if you have investments, how does that impact, the social fiber of this country, in terms of, you know, again, you can have all types of civil unrest or protests that take place as a result of things that are happening in the world and America's lack of action on it. So being sensitive to that also allows you to be a little bit more diverse in terms of your perspective of the world, and also sensitive to your neighbors.
All right, good stuff. Looking forward to hearing from you, my listening audience. 215-263-1039. 215-263-1039. We are talking about the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela. But in the second half, we're also talking about the importance of being aware of world events, especially when it comes to Africa, the continent. It is not a country. There is not just one type of people there, and they don't speak one language there. But, you know, is it important to you that you are aware of what's going on over there? And should we be doing any protests or anything against the wrongs that are happening there? Yes, we have our own wrongs here in the United States, for sure. But some of the stuff that's going on over there is simply not happening here. And if you learn about it, you have to say to yourself, my God, who would do that? Who would believe that that's okay to do? And the people that are dealing with that, excuse me, how can you actually go on day to day dealing with something as horrible as this? I will give you an example. So I learned quite a bit about the struggles in the Congo. I was in a play earlier this year called Ruin. It was written by Lynn Nottage a few years ago, I think around 2004, 2005. And it does kind of outline the plight of women in the Congo. There has been a series of mass rape and mutilation of women for a number of years. There are various groups that are not just fighting for power, but they're raping and pillaging the land for things that we all over the world use, like minerals that are used to make cell phones and computers, which most of us have. There are different factions fighting for that, and they have no problem raping and mutilating a woman just to claim the land and to suppress the people so that they don't fight back, so they can just go ahead, go in the mines, take what they want, get their money, and run. And yet, we're using these items all the time. But if we knew what, you know, how the item came to us, you know, in its original form, we may think twice about some of the
Absolutely.
Stuff that we use.
Absolutely. I mean, you make an amazing point. And that is, again, it first starts with having the information. Once you have the information, then you can be more, you know, what I would call, you know, morally responsible, mm-hmm. and be able to say, you know what, I understand that these elements, these minerals, are, you know, go to this particular company. And so mm-hmm. we'll boycott the company. And so, because again, why are they doing this? Mm-hmm. They're doing this for money, mm-hmm. you know, bottom line. And if you're not going to get the money as a result of that, then, you know, they'll stop doing it. You know, it's the quickest thing. You know, I know a lot of people in a perfect world want to say, hey, listen, how about we just appeal to their heart or a sense of decency? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't exist. You know, again, it's about money. And if at the end of the day, they're not going to get the money, then, you know, then that's probably the fastest way to stop the action from taking place.
Yeah, it's so interesting, you know, to learn about the various struggles in the various countries. And just even looking up the information on the Congo, because I do remember, child of the 70s that I am, I remember having this thing that was put together by Miller Beer. It was called mm-hmm. the Kings of Africa series. And in my school, we had these posters of the various kings of various countries in Africa. And I remember there was something posted about the country Zaire. And I remember just being fascinated with that country, not knowing its history, not knowing that that is now the modern Congo. So if you are wondering what happened to Zaire on my world map, well, Zaire is the Congo. And it has a very wretched past, I should say. And I will get into a little bit more of that. We are talking mostly about Nelson Mandela and South Africa. So the Congo struggle and South Africa struggle are different, though they are struggles, and we are honoring Nelson Mandela's life. But in this segment, we are talking about the importance of having world knowledge, importance of having information on what is going on in various countries in the world, especially in Africa. So we want to hear from you. Do you think it's important that we know about these struggles today, know about the history of various countries in Africa and how it relates to us? Do you think that's important for you to know? And how much do you know? Give us a call, 215-263-1039. Going to the phones, we have Albert calling in from Bensalem, PA. Albert, good morning. You're live on the air.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
I would first of all say thank you, you know, for recognizing such a great topic, mm-hmm. Africa. Mm-hmm. I was in Liberia in 1990. I'm originally from Liberia, West Africa. Mm-hmm. And my country was going through a terrible war, mm-hmm. a terrible civil war. You know, Liberia was colonized by America. Mm-hmm. We was going through a terrible civil war. Bodies lay in the street, mm-hmm. people running from one place to another. Mm-hmm. And the moment we heard Mandela were released, mm-hmm. that jubilated us. Mm-hmm. It gave us faith that our world was going to be transformed, and we knew we were going to have peace someday. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the whole country at that moment felt so joyful mm-hmm. that Mandela was a free man again.
Yes.
I mean, for a country going through a terrible civil war in 1990, mm-hmm. and listening to the radio that Mandela was a free man, we knew that the world was recognizing the court of the Africans.
Mm.
And I listened to you and her. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of my friends, oh, you're from Africa. How's Africa? Hmm. I mean, people not informed about Africa. They just didn't want to say Africa is, you're just like, mm-hmm. like in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
No, but Africa, as you said, that's five different parts, north, west, south, east.
Right.
That's Africa, you know?
Right.
South Africa alone.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people are informed about South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not informed about the struggle Africans go through.
Yeah.
I mean, we migrate to America and try to work hard and put in all our trust. People don't understand, like, oh, when you guys come from Africa, why? Because we see the opportunity and we're trying to embrace it here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in Monrovia last December up to January.
Mm-hmm.
I took back some things just for people that struggle.
Yeah.
A nation that believe in faith. I mean, people you see that don't have food on the table today, but believe they will have food to eat before the day comes to an end.
Mm.
And this thing come on. I'm highly impressed and would appeal you so much that if people can be informed how desperate it is across the nation. I mean, even here we know there's some things that's hard. You see the homeless, you see people you're struggling, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, but if we just look at common things that people in Africa struggle from.
Yeah.
There are people in Africa today, some people born have never worn a pair of flip-flops.
Mm.
People struggling from feet hunger because there's no shoes.
Right.
And we're not talking about hunger. I mean, we see it. I mean, there's a lot of common things. People we see people that feet are hungry and all that. But common things.
Right.
I go to West Philly, South Philly, and see shoes on the electric wire. It struggled me.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, my neighbors give me, once a year, they all drop off shoes to my house just for me to send back home.
Oh, wow.
You know,
wow.
When I came here first, the missionary was so grateful. I know because of the great reception.
Yeah.
Before we had missionary taking our time going to Liberia, you know, trying to help kids. We had this student exchange program.
Yeah.
That we trying to talk back to our president, see how best we can bring this program back. It gave us interchange of culture, you know.
Yes.
We brought students back from here and go back to Africa and study and know that they study different sections of the world. Students from Africa come here and see. And, you know, the interchange of culture opened us to the positive and negative perspective of the world.
Right.
I'm just so happy to listen to you guys and recognizing. I know. I hope that the deaf and that I would bring back some real love that we have, but you know, the intermigration, interchange of culture.
Yes,
that we have years ago.
Absolutely, yeah. And I appreciate I appreciate your story and your point, Albert. I know we have a nice, sizable Liberian community here in the Philadelphia area. I've met several people who, you know, talked about how their parents came here during the war in the 90s, and you know, just even their difficulty melding into the society here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and you know, shout out to my Liberian family, you know, Benati, Alvin, Eugene, Cuckoo, hey, all those cats out there, you know. I grew up in my college years, you know, my adoptive family, Liberians, and I learned a lot, you know, everything from, as you mentioned, you know, John Rushworth getting things started to, you know, that Civil War that I think it was 89 and 96, if my memory correct. You know, a lot happened, and you know, it totally decimated the country. And it's great to see now, you know, you have, with the new president and the things that have happened, you know, some adjustments that are, you know, that are really taking place in Liberia to really get things back where they need to be, and to really see now my same friends now that did not know when they were going back, to now see them building homes in Liberia. You know, it's incredible, and to see you know how happy they are to. You know, to see things restored to some level of normalcy, I think that's important. But again, just remembering that it's not over. You know, it can take a couple years for a war to just end, but it'll take generations for society to kind of be restored back to where it needs to be. And there are people that will go without for those years if we don't get involved right away.
Absolutely. And I would just, and also, Albert, thank you so much for your call, because we know we had to let you go there because we're getting close to the end of the show. I would hope and I would like to use this opportunity, since we've been talking about Nelson Mandela's passing, the history of his life and struggle and, you know, some of his quotes and whatnot, to invite people to get reconnected to world events, to world history. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been out of high school for so long. I don't know that we are as connected to the world events as we were years ago. For some reason, I just feel like everybody was really deeply involved in world events, whether it was struggles in Africa, South Africa, or growing up listening to, you know, about the Cold War, you know, things that were going on in Europe and Eastern Europe and Russia and things like that. So I don't know. I hope that this will, his passing will inspire people to look up more about what is going on. And I say that because I know we have our own struggles here. But if you're on social networking, you'll see a lot of people put hashtag first world problems. And if you look at some of the struggles that other people are going through, like Albert was talking about, like, yeah, some folks just don't even have a pair of flip-flops, period. There's a lot of people here that have at least a pair of shoes.
Right.
At least. And can you imagine walking through the streets every day, sending your child to school, walking several miles to school every day with no shoes? So just to get reconnected to that, what can that do for you and the way that you look and handle your own struggle?
I agree. I think with the advent of, you know, social media, the inclusion of it into our everyday lives, we've actually become, you know, very much to ourselves, our own little world.
Mm.
You know, while we do network amongst, you know, other people that we, you know, across the world, things of that nature, I think we take it really on the commercial side of things, not necessarily of anything of real substance. So,
right.
You know, while we're looking at pictures, while we're looking at a cute little post, and we're entertained, I don't think we take as much advantage of, you know, the fact that we do have the world at our fingertips, that we can actually do more than even just read those articles,
right.
And do some research. We can actually talk to individuals that live in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
We can get a sense of what's really happening from, you know, not just the social side of things, but politically, and also getting some more exposure to, you know, their class system and what the needs of that country are. And maybe doing something crazy, like even sending information over to them that perhaps may not just be easily in print, you know, in terms of, you know, from a social media standpoint, but actually sending goods over, sending items over that might be reflective of your culture. I mean, again, the human touch is starting to fade away.
Well, we can't let that happen. And with that, we're actually going to close the show with a piece that you heard coming out of the commercial break that our producer, Larry, put together. We'd like for you to listen to it again and reflect again on the life and legacy of Nelson Mandela, his strength, his tireless pursuit for freedom and just basic human rights in South Africa. And just think about your connection to world events. How much do you know? And if you don't know much, why not take this opportunity to learn? So with that said, much love to you, Donovan West. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and to you, Larry. Thank you for all that you do. Stay tuned. Marriage Beyond the Vows is coming up next, but we're going to leave you with this remembrance and a tribute to Nelson Mandela.
We have made it very clear in our policy that South Africa is a country of many races. There is room for all the various races in this country.
Thank you very much to you all. Thank you that you chose to care. I want to tell you, as I have told many other meetings before, we respect you, we admire you, and above all, we love you.
At his trial in 1964, Nelson Mandela closed his statement from the dock, saying, "I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It's an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die."
Listening to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's Inspiration Station.